Endurance takes practice. It takes desire and passion. Welcome to Enduring Churches podcast with Alan and Trent, pastors with a desire to help you endure.
Well, good morning and welcome back to the Enduring Churches podcast. I'm Trent Young and I'm here with my good friend Alan Small. And we do this podcast to help you as a pastor, as a church leader, as a church member to endure. We want your church to do great over the long haul. And so Alan, today we get to have a special guest with us. And so introduce our guest for us.
Well, today we have with us Paul McGinnis. He's the Vice President of Sales and Marketing for a company called Vomo. If you've not heard of them, you're going to hear more about them because I think they are on the very forefront of what's taking place in churches and trying to get out beyond the walls into our community. And we have known Paul for a long time. He's another college graduate from us. He's younger than us, so he's just a kid. Graduated a couple of years after us. So Paul, we are really delighted to have you with us today. So tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Well, I appreciate both of you having me on. This is an honor. I grew up in Colorado, so I'm a big Colorado guy, and grew up a big Bronco fan. And then, of course,
amen.
God's sick joke to me was to move me to Dallas, where I'm in Dallas Cowboy country, and actually in Arlington, where I paid many years taxes for their new stadium. So I think he was just winking at me for that. But I have been here for really about the last 25 years and I'm married to Marianne, who you guys know. I married her mm-hmm. in college, and two kids that are both married. And actually, we're grandparents.
Are you really? Not.
Yeah. Yeah. We have almost a 2-year-old grandson. So we started very young. We got married when we were 19 and 20 and had kids early. And then our daughter basically did the same thing. So when you have those two things happen, you become a grandparent at 47. So
well, congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. It's exciting. So, and had a variety of things in my career along the way of for-profit and not-for-profit and ministry. And now I've landed at a tech startup called Vomo, which is short for Volunteer Movement, and actually just recently started about 3 months ago.
Well, and so explain to us a little bit more about how does this relate to churches and how, what all does Volunteer Movement, what are you guys aiming at?
Well, we were started by two pastors, so that's an interesting part of the history, and they were simply in the church going, we have so many people that are sitting out in the audience or in the pew, and engaging maybe on Sunday morning, but that's where it stops. And they just had this, incredible conviction of being the hands and feet of Jesus in the community, and what does that look like? And as they started thinking about that, there was a lot of reasons for it. They saw that people weren't involved in the community, and really looking at what was going on locally, outside of the church walls, that they could impact, and then feeling obviously commanded to do so biblically. And so they started something called Awaken the City, which was actually here outside of Dallas, and then it moved to a movement within the International Mission Board. And one of the founders actually went to the UK and began working, connecting churches and members of churches to local causes and engaging them in the community. And once they started doing that, they said, we need to leverage technology to be able to do this. And so they started a company called Vomo that really is a simple volunteer engagement platform that really easily connects good people to good causes. And so they wanted to just power a global volunteer movement. So we work with churches today. We work with any organization that has volunteers. So large, nonprofits, small or large, school districts, cities, political campaigns. A lot of them have obviously a lot of volunteers. And so we're a Christian-run business, and but open up our services to all organizations that work with volunteers and want to engage volunteers at a deeper level.
And one of the things you have also, at least from the church side, is you also have some integration ability with some of the popular church management systems.
We do. You know, in being in a software as a service company, a SaaS business, you integrations are key. And so you have a lot of churches out there that are, you know, use Planning Center, or they might use Rock or CCB or something like that. And to have integrations where you can integrate with data across the system so they're talking to each other is really key. And so we have a lot of churches that will use both systems just because of the features and benefits of each system and how they work so well together. So yeah, it's a really, some churches just use us, some churches use church management software and tack us on to their technology stack. So it just depends what type of church and what the needs are.
So let's say a church wanted to come in and talk to you guys. What would that process look like?
Yeah, it's really simple. You go to our website, which is vomo.org. Vomo.com is, I think, an island in Fiji. So we are not in Fiji.
Oh, nice. I wouldn't mind going there, though.
Yeah, that would be nice. You could go volunteer in Fiji. And if they would just come down on the price a little bit, we might buy vomo.com. But until then, we are vomo.org. And you can look on the site, and all over the site, it's schedule a demo. And you can do a demo. It takes about 20, 25 minutes, and we go through the platform and all the features of it and that kind of thing. And you can ask questions. And then from there, you know, we can give you a quote and give you access to the system to see if it's something you want to do.
Well, and so, you know, Paul, we talked to a lot of different size churches, but we have a lot of smaller churches. Is this something that would work for a smaller church too, or medium to small size church?
Yes, it does. Actually, we started as two pastors founding us, our focus was churches early on. And so churches is our largest client base right now, our largest vertical. And it ranges from church plants to mega churches. And, you know, a church plant or a smaller church might use us exclusively just for, you know, a variety of reasons. They don't need a huge church management software and that kind of thing, but they do need to manage, you know, different projects and different ministries from that perspective. But then all the way up to, you know, large churches with thousands of people, we might be a part of a technology stack that they use to do it. So it's all over the place for sure.
And what are some of the benefits that a volunteer gains from being a part of a system like this? Because I think that's one of the neat things that you offer, that there are some benefits to the volunteer as well.
Yeah, you know, one of the things we want to do, it's not just a volunteer. You know, a lot of people say that they have a volunteer management system, and there's a reason we say a volunteer engagement platform, because it's not only managing from a church perspective all the many projects and volunteers that come through the doors, which, you know, on Sundays especially can be crazy. But it's also engaging with the volunteer. You know, when our founders were talking to people, a lot of people wanted to volunteer, but it wasn't easy to do so. Either they couldn't find ways to volunteer, or nonprofits or churches might not make it as easy for them to volunteer, mainly in the community. So it was community organizations. And so they wanted to create an app that would allow volunteers to be better engaged with the organization they want to be a part of. And so just, you know, knowing that somebody touches their phone, you know, I can't remember the last number I saw. It was like 2,600 times a day on average. And that's not teenagers. That's like people like us. And I was just like, you know, that's probably right. And so we better have something that all generations, but specifically the younger generation, are going to be able to engage with. And as you guys know, even us at our age, but especially younger generation, we want it to be on our phone. That's where we engage things. So to create an app that allows you as a volunteer to search for different projects that you're passionate about, whether it's at your church or it's in organizations within your community, to be able to read about them, to be able to join, to be able to ask questions. And then once you do that, to be able to get reminders on your phone and push notifications of, hey, don't forget to show up and don't forget to bring this and don't forget to wear this and those kind of things, it just made a lot of sense. And so that's what we've been working on for the last almost 3 years, of just building a platform that not only allows the organization to manage the whole volunteer piece that can sometimes be really cumbersome, but on the other side, making sure that it is a really user-friendly app for the volunteer so that they can be better engaged and hopefully not get donor fatigue as quickly and share it with people on social media and those kind of things.
And so, Paul, as I looked at your website in vomo.org, not .com, but .org, I was noticing the Impact Your City part and listing of projects that are around. And, you know, there's some in the Dallas area, but not just in the Dallas area, that are listed. And so not only can it help our churches be, our people be involved in things in our church, but it can also show them possibilities outside the church too.
Yeah, you're exactly right. You know, recently we worked with Sony Pictures on the new Mr. Rogers movie that came out in November, and they wanted to come to us and do what they called a Be a Neighbor campaign on November 16th, on a Saturday, November 16th, in honor of Mr. Rogers, of what he espoused, of being a neighbor and loving those that are around you and serving those around you and meeting people where they are. So it was really neat. We had volunteer events all over the country, some through churches, some through nonprofits. It was all over the place, specifically on that day, to really push what it means to be a neighbor and to be a good neighbor. Because you guys know, I mean, you see it, you've experienced it yourself, and people in your congregations have seen it. We're built to give, and we're built to love others and serve others. And we see that when there's disasters a lot of times. You know, it's a hurricane in Houston or a tornado in Oklahoma or whatever it might be. It's just amazing how people, at their core being, when something like that happens, it doesn't matter ethnicity, it doesn't matter your belief system, people come together and work together to help others. And so I think that's what we're trying to get at the core. When you talk to our CEO, one of our founders, you know, he said, we're built not only for community, but we're built also to give. If we're made in the image of God, we're built to serve and love others. And so to tap into that, whether you're a believer or not, there's something special about that that really hits you deep within your soul.
Yeah, Paul, you know, one of the things that I talk with my church about, you know, and we've been building on this year, is what's really the picture of discipleship? And it's so easy for a church to get focused on the upward relationship with Christ and the inward relationship with one another. Mm-hmm. But I really think where the church has fallen short over the last 30 years is really engaging the world around us. Mm-hmm. And that outside relationship, as you said, we're wired for that. And in fact, I don't believe we can be a disciple if we don't have an outward focus and an outward mindset. And I think that this is a wonderful opportunity for people to engage in missions. And there's actually some rewards and some things that you guys offer as well that people can kind of check out. And I think that's neat, because I think just sometimes you need that extra push to be involved in some things. But how did you end up at Vomo? Because this has kind of been a journey for you. And like you said, you've only been there 3 months. So would you tell us a little bit about your life before?
Yeah, you know, I think I was at the Halftime Institute before in a full-time capacity. And the Halftime Institute was started by Bob Buford. He wrote a very iconic book called Halftime. Many pastors and financial advisors and other people hand out the book Halftime when somebody gets to midlife and they're like, you know, I'm not content. Or they may say, I'm just not, you know, I have a great job and a great family, but I'm just not as happy as I thought I'd be. Well, we say they're in a season of halftime. And halftime is just this kind of pause in midlife where all you've done or all you've won or all you own just starts mattering less. It's not that it doesn't matter anymore, but all of a sudden you get to this point, and it's typically in midlife, and you know, who knows what midlife is, 40 to 55, whatever it is, where it's just like, man, there's got to be something more. And I experienced that. I was an executive at Ecolab. It's a big chemical company based out of St. Paul, Minnesota, and I had been there about 10 years, and everything was going fine. I had a great job and great team, and you know, we were doing good things and all those kind of things. And typically this season of halftime is triggered by something. And we see it. I worked with people in this season of halftime for 6 years when I was at the Halftime Institute. And I still do. I'm still a coach with them on contract. So I still work with them. And they're usually triggered by something. Very rarely do you enter this season of kind of thought and reflection just because it's an epiphany on your commute home. It's almost always triggered by something. And so for me, it was triggered by tragedy. In 2007, my parents were in a car accident, and my dad was killed, and my mom was in ICU for about 2 months in Mobile, Alabama. And those kind of tragedies wake you up to a lot of things. And I went through all the things that I think any of us that have gone through where you're like, all right, where was God in this? And you know, wait a minute, we prayed for safety on this trip. Why did this happen? All those things. And I wrestled with those things spiritually, but I got through those. But the questions that kept on ruminating in my mind when that happened was, life is short. What am I doing with my life? Like, am I making the absolute most impact I can for the kingdom of God? And I was making an impact. Don't get me wrong. I wasn't just lazing around being a couch potato. I was actively involved in church, and I was trying to lead the best I could in my organization as a Christian in a very non-Christian environment and those kind of things. So it wasn't from a laziness perspective. It was just like, am I really using my gifts and abilities and my experience that God has given me to the absolute best? Is it my best contribution to humanity? And so that started this thought process in my mind that was triggered by my dad's death. And then all of a sudden we had three other deaths in about a year and a half of people really close to us, some my age, some older. My wife's mom died in her sleep suddenly. I mean, it was just, we were really tired of death. And yes. We had a cancer scare with our daughter, and it was just like a 3-year period of just really tough stuff. And what I found during this time is, again, I was just saying, God, what do you have for me in this? And what I've learned and what the Halftime Institute talks about a lot is the sigmoid curve. And the sigmoid curve is just a typical S curve. And I learned a lot about it in business and you know, graduate school, of the typical S curve where, you know, let's say the iPhone comes out, whenever it first came out, it kind of has it goes down before it goes up, because, you know, there's a lot of bugs and, you know, there's just a lot of things to fix. And then all of a sudden it comes up and it starts really kind of going up and to the right. But eventually the iPhone 1 turns over on itself, because we all want an iPhone 2 or what, you know. And the same with churches and organizations. We all go through this. When we start out, it's a little tough. There's a lot of learning. And then all of a sudden, you kind of get to this new normal and you get a rhythm. And then it turns over itself. And I believe that life is a series of sigmoid curves. And the Apostle Paul is really a good example of a half-timer. I don't think half-timer is used in the Bible. Maybe in the Message paraphrase, it says half-timer. But, you know, he was in his first half of life. He was incredibly successful. You know, it was misguided, but he was at the top of his class and he had all kinds of zeal, and he went, when he had a goal, he went after it. And then he had a triggering event on the road to Damascus. But we forget that he didn't just start ministering to the Gentiles. Right. There was a period of learning where he was in Arabia for years that we don't know what happened. What I believe happened during that time is God was working on his identity. And his identity shifted from what he thought was the most important thing, and his identity was in his work, to what is my identity in Christ, and how can God ever forgive me, and how can I ever forgive myself, and how does Jesus fulfill the law? And I think there was this period of, I think it was 3 years, if I remember right, 2 or 3 years in Arabia, where he was just wrestling with that so that God could prepare him for the next sigmoid curve, in which he had incredible impact. And so I went through that. I actually felt like God was telling me to leave Ecolab, which made no sense whatsoever financially or just career-wise. And through a series of just incredible events where God just really spoke to me in some really miraculous ways, I left. And I took about a 12-month sabbatical. And during that time, I was introduced to Halftime. And I had a coach that worked with me, and I just was able to think my confusion out loud about what does this mean? I feel like God is going to use all this experience that I have and the tragedy that I've been through and just life experience in general. But I don't know how it's going to work. And he said, there's three things we've learned about people in midlife transition in working 20 years at the Halftime Institute. And I said, man, I'm all for it. If you've paid some dumb tax that I can go ahead and learn now, I'm all for it, right?
Teach me, Yoda.
Yes, I was like that. I was in a very sponge mode of just learning things. And he said there's three things we've learned. And one is the core. You need to learn in midlife, what is the core of who you are? Like, how has God uniquely designed you, your passions and your strengths and your values, but also the experiences and the background that you've experienced? How does that all culminate into, he wanted me to get to like a mission statement. Like a personal mission statement. And some people roll their eyes at that, and because we've all done that for either our organization, our churches. Let's come up with a vision and mission, and sometimes it's just mind-numbing, the process. But it was really good for me because I was able to really focus on who I was at my core. When I first heard that, I kind of rolled my eyes because I was on the phone, so he couldn't see me, and I was like, I have had so many strength tests and now it's Enneagram and, whatever, Myers-Briggs or anything. And those are helpful, don't get me wrong, but I was like, what am I going to learn new about myself? And he gave me a quote from Howard Thurman that was really meaningful at that time in my life. And he said, Howard Thurman said, don't go find out what the world needs and go do that, but find out what makes you come alive and go do that, because what the world needs is more men and women that are fully alive. And that hit me to my core because I really did have a pretty good handle on what I was good at and what I wasn't good at, but I had no idea what I was passionate about. And so we spent the next few months really working on what was I really passionate about? What had God, just seeded in me really at an early age for me that I was passionate about? And when you combine your passions and your unique strength that God has given you, and then coupled with his spirit guiding you and leading you into what needs to happen, it's a powerful and impactful thing that happens, not only in your life, but to the people around you. And so I think by going through that myself and the emotional roller coaster that it was, and then working with hundreds of clients over the last 6 years that are in this same transition, I've really learned the importance of aligning yourself with causes that you can get behind and care about because of either what you've gone through yourself or whatever. And then when you do that, it becomes an overflow of your heart. So it's not this forced mechanism of Alan or Trent are telling me I need to go volunteer here or do this. When God gets a hold of your heart and changes you in that way, you have to do something with it. It just overflows out of you. And I've experienced that. And to say I'm like that every day, that would be a complete lie. But I've experienced that where when those things align, it's incredibly powerful. And it just is amazing to sit back and let God just say, man, this is how I created you. And when you listen to me and combine these things, I can do amazing things with your life. And so I went through that process, and that eventually led me here to VOMO, but I'm still a part of Halftime, and the impact of that organization, not only on my life, but to others, is really, really phenomenal.
Well, Paul, as you talk about that, I can tell, I can't see you because we're recording in different places, but I can just hear in your voice that you just light up as soon as you start talking about your experience and how the things you learned and being passionate about that. And I think that's a huge message for guys. Yeah, as you say, the halftime part, man, I'm almost in the last quarter here. And so, but it's important for us because we tend to get in a rut, and a rut is just a grave without any end. Mm-hmm. And so we need to be able to move forward and continue because God's kept us here.
Yeah, and I think I think the biggest thing for me was when I was in this phase of life, and I was at it around 40, which is is a little early. I mean, again, there's no normal, but the average age client that we have that we serve at halftime was probably between 50 and 53. So it was in there. And again, we had 75-year-olds and we had 40-year-olds. But is that it's a very normal process in midlife. And it's not the typical midlife crisis. It can get to there if you don't do anything about it. But really, it's just this time, like I said, where you're forced, or maybe not forced isn't the right word, but there's a pause in your life for some reason. And it could be the sale of a business. It could be a layoff. It doesn't have to be tragedy by any means. It could be a divorce. It's something that just gives you pause and reflection. And so for me, just to know that I wasn't the only one, because it's very isolating, especially for somebody in my right. in my role where I was an executive, so I was, by the world's standards, I was successful. And so when you go to a friend and say, hey, I have a great job and stuff, but I'm just not feeling content, they're like, you know, get over yourself. I wish I had your job, or I wish I had the size church you had, or I wish I had this, and you don't. And so for a while I just had to really look and say, am I just being arrogant? Am I being ungrateful? And there was some of that for sure. But at the core, it was the Holy Spirit prompting me that I have something more for you in this next season of life, and it's going to be more impactful than the first half of your life because of your maturity and your experience and what I've brought you through. And that's what's really neat, I think, for me to realize, is I realize it's never too late. It's absolutely never too late. I mean, you see that theme throughout the Bible constantly.
Yes,
but even in just the world and just people in general, it's never too late. And so, for people to have a mindset that the second half of life, or to your point, Trent, the last quarter, can be more impactful than the first half, that's an incredible thing. We don't think that way, and we think retirement, and we're put to pasture, and we're going to get more crotchety the older we get, and we're going to get more set in our ways. And that's not what we found. The people that finish well are more adaptable and they're more flexible, and they define what finishing well looks like, and they know what they're passionate about, and they know what to say yes to and what to say no to, and they live a life of impact. And we've seen that over and over and over through the people we've worked with at halftime.
Well, and you know, Paul, as you're talking, one of the things I think about is what Trent and I are doing right now. Is how we kind of came to this place where, we can pastor and we can kind of do our thing, but we want to help other churches, and we want to help others endure in this journey. And I find this to be a fulfilling thing in my life, to be able to share and hopefully encourage someone else along the way. And that's really kind of, as a coach, what we do, right? You know, I coach a cross country team. I'm coaching people who haven't figured much out at all yet. but yet when people get something, it's really neat to watch that in their life, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I think you get to this point in this pause, and you just described what you and Trent have gone through, is you have this propensity to give back. You have this propensity to say, we've been blessed and we want to give back. And so most people that come through this, that's their true spirit in it. It's not from a selfish perspective at all. It's just this phase of life where, like, man, I have been really blessed and I want to give back. I don't know how. Like, how can I give back through my business, or how can I give back? And we've had people. I had a lawyer that I worked with. He was a partner at a law firm in Calgary, and he sacrificed everything on the way up the corporate ladder to become partner. And when I was coaching him, he was 42, 43, and he was in the middle of a divorce. He didn't have a relationship with his kids that was healthy. And he said, Paul, I sacrificed everything for, you know, basically for wealth and status, which a lot of us have done, even within the church world. And he said, we were working through it, and he knew that God was going to tell him to quit being a lawyer. You know, like that's like sinful. And we can all debate that on another podcast, if being a lawyer is sinful. But he was just like, no, I know God's going to call me to do something significant. And as we worked through the process, what he discovered is, first of all, significance is not based on your occupation, or your vocation. We've tend to have done that over the years, right? Is that, you know, to be significant, you have to be in ministry full time or be a missionary. That's what I grew up with, right? And if you're in business or something, I mean, we've gotten, I think, over that a little bit in the kind of the business's mission movement over the last few years. But he was like, I remember he called me. We started working through his core, and he started going back to high school and what was he was really passionate about. And he started asking friends and family and all this kind of stuff. And we went through a process for him. And I remember he called me one day and he goes, Paul, he goes, I just realized something. I go, what? And he goes, I am a really good lawyer. And he goes, I think God has given me a platform at this law firm, but he goes, I've never considered it that I need to be a steward of my platform at work. He goes, I've always thought I need to be a steward of my finances or even a steward with my family lately, but he goes, I've always put work in this separate category. And so he said, this is what I'm going to do. When we looked at his core and what he was passionate about, he's a really good people developer. He loves mentoring young people. And he said, I want to mentor young lawyers in my law firm. And I said, okay, what does that look like? And we started exploring that. And where he ended up was he had to first answer the question, which is a financial question, is how much is enough? And I remember he said, and I'll try to depict this, you know, via audio. He put his hand up pretty high and he goes, I make this much money. He goes, but I only need this much. And he dropped his hand probably a foot and a half from up high above his head to way like below his chin. And so he answered that question and he said, so this is all I need. And he goes, so I want to give away the rest. And I go, okay, what does that mean? Does it just mean you write a check? He goes, nope. He goes, I'm at a law firm. He goes, it's all about billable hours. And he goes, when I get to my billable hour limit, I want to go to a young lawyer who aspires to be partner, who is looking for cases and looking for billable hours. And I want to say, hey, I'll give you these billable hours, but you have to agree to be mentored by me for a year. And of course, a young lawyer out of law school is like, oh my gosh, I get to be mentored by a partner that's been there and done that. Absolutely. And his goal was to mentor them on the law and the case at first, but ultimately to get to his marriage and his family, and then ultimately the gospel. And he said, I want to make sure that they don't make the same mistakes I did as I sacrificed my family on the way to the top. And so God is just so unique, is what I've seen, is how God can take this midlife emotional roller coaster of one day being excited about what God has for me next, and then the next day being completely confused, of working it out and bringing it into kind of smaller components and bite-sized components. And he got to a place where he's like, you know, God has given me this platform for a reason. I just need to be a good steward of it. And then he defined what that looked like. It was absolutely amazing to see, and to see the passion and almost the scales come off his eyes of just seeing what God had been doing for many, many years, and how God could use the tragedy in his life. And now he's reconciled with his kids. He has a good relationship with his ex-wife. They're not remarried or anything like that, but he has had a complete turnaround, and God has just shown him in spades that it's never too late.
Well, that's great. That's a great story, and I'm so grateful that there are organizations like Halftime out there that can help people. And you said, you know, they've helped pastors, but they help people in the business world, or they help anyone who's really kind of come to that place of just that internal conflict of I don't know what my life means at this point in time.
And yeah.
So that's great. God's really blessed you with a couple of special opportunities, and I'm so grateful that God has kind of worked with you and brought you to where you are today. And I can see the passion, and I think that's just so exciting. And we're grateful that you would take time out of your schedule to join us, because I know your words will relate to a lot of people out there.
Well, I appreciate it. You guys are on it too. It's such an incredible journey, and it's a journey, isn't it? I mean, it's you know, just as soon as you have arrived, God reveals the next path, and you're like, oh, okay, there's a lot more to be done and more to learn, and it's just been an honor to see God use every single thing in my life. Nothing's wasted in God's economy. And
that's right.
And it's just amazing to see. And I have to remind myself of that. You know, I'm as frustrated as I get reading about the Israelites as they keep forgetting as they come out of Egypt and a miracle after miracle after miracle, and yet they can complain so quickly and lose sight. And I get so frustrated reading that, and I'm like, I am no different than them. I forget God's faithfulness so quickly. And just to remind myself of his faithfulness, especially in times of transition when you are having to face a new normal, whether it was forced upon you or whether you did it yourself, I found God uses and grows us the most in those times. It's kind of that life between the curves of one curve is rolling over on itself and the next curve is starting. And that's where I've grown the most spiritually. If I allow God to really take my heart during those times, it can be significant spiritual milestones during that transition.
Well, Paul, we truly appreciate you going through this, man. I'm inspired. I want to learn more, and we want our folks that are listening today to learn more as well. And so our guest today has been Paul McGinnis, and he works with an organization right now called VOMO.org. We want you to go and check that out, volunteermovement.org, but it's just V-O-M-O. And then he was also talking to us about the Halftime Institute. That's halftimeinstitute.org. So much good information. And again, we do this and we have great folks like Paul talking with us to help you endure and to do ministry and to do what God has built you to do for the long haul. And so I want to say that we appreciate you taking time to listen with us today.
We appreciate your time and the fact that you have chosen to spend time with us. Make sure to share your email with us so we can keep you informed about future episodes.